Well, here we are sitting in one of the bastions of academic power, one of the cradles of learning in the United States, Harvard University, whose endowment probably exceeds the budget of many countries of the world. Talk about the relationship. You know, often people talk about the military-industrial complex, Eisenhower's famous term, but they never bring the academy in there. What role does the academy play in empire?
Well, the academy plays a very important role. Historically, the academy has been one of the foremost pillars of empire. The critical academy also exists, but by and large, the academy reflects and represents the so-called virtues of manifest destiny and of the empire. Harvard, where we're sitting at the moment, is particularly interesting because the land on which this is built was, of course, native land. And one of the founding members of Harvard actually said that more or less had the line that we came to a virgin lands. And it was almost like refugees coming to a land without a people and taking it over, which we later found familiar in Zionist thinking. And totally trying to forget and ignore the horrors inflicted on Native Americans. And this has been part and parcel of the system for a long time. Throughout the Cold War, the United States Academy. Obviously there are always critical voices, one has to say that, and good critical voices, but the overwhelming bulk of the Academy, let's say, is like plasticine. It goes with the empire, it molds itself accordingly. And of late, David, we have to say that together with the more traditional voices of the establishment, Huntington, Fukuyama, this aging totem, Bernard Lewis, who we are now told that there's a Lewis doctrine. The Wall Street Journal tells us that the Lewis doctrine is bring democracy to the Muslim East. This is the same guy who was giving talks in the 50s during the Cold War, saying that Islam and communism were twins, at a time when actually the American Empire was using Islam to try and defeat communism. This guy was so hostile to Islam that his one attempt to draw back from the establishment, he was worried about its closeness to Islamism, and he said, Islam and communism are twins, they're very similar, they have similar collectivist approaches, etc., etc. So these are people who have basically dominated the academy. And even lesser, you know, people more objective have by and large found it difficult to buck the trend. Add to that what has happened to the academy after the collapse of the communist world, is the popularity of postmodernism, of cultural studies, all of which denigrate the study in pursuit of history as a grand narrative. And I think these people are now finding the resurgence of the empire and the fact that Bush and his neocons are not scared of parading themselves before the world and saying, yeah, we do this because we can, and do this, and we do this because we have to, and it suits our interests, and that's what matters. So the Bush administration coming so naked, you know, dropping all its clothes and saying, yeah, this is the empire, naked and strong, love it or hate it, we're there to stay. And this is providing some problems for that wing of the academy, which had thought it could live in its own world. It wanted to be critical, but it also was desired not to get involved in big debates. Politics, history, these were old things. They were on to new things. They would discuss tiny little fragments tiny little episodes. They would discuss gender, they would discuss identity, and these things were far more important. Well, history has shown that this is not the case now, and that the Academy has to become more critical if it's going to move forward. Let me add, David, a new type of figure which the Empire needs and which the Academy nourishes. I talk now about, given the crisis in the Arab East, of, let's say, a new species has emerged. Let's call him the House Arab. These are the people like Fuad Ajmi and Kenan Makia, who I refer to in my books, who basically want to please the Empire, want to do its needs, serve its needs, and in the case of Ajmi, are completely and totally shameless in the way they abase themselves before the Empire. This is a sort of person who says things which many Americans might think but wouldn't dare to say in public. And the value of people like that is that they say in public things which even ruling class establishment Americans would not like to say, however much they might think it. And this gives these people their niche in, let's say, the life of the debased media. They need people like this to show that there are these House Arabs who are on our side, and look how intelligent they are. And the reason they're intelligent is because they say what people want to hear. Their intelligence is determined exclusively by their instrumentality. They're useful, and therefore they have to be used. And many people fall into this trap, including good people. But these people, let's say, the House Arabs, are the embedded intellectuals of the Empire. That's where they are, that's where they see their future, and they probably dream that, you know, they might rise further. They are very happy people. No problems for them at all.